Well, I'd just like to tell you a few things about myself. I'm on the small side, but everyone says I am a powerhouse. I work really, really hard. I'm a filtration expert, actually. I found the work really interesting. I'm happiest when things are, you know, in balance. I have a twin. We're very, very tight. I find that in life, I rarely get the recognition that I deserve, but I'm working on that. I'm working on that.
So how well do you know your kidneys? Did you know that if you have high blood pressure, diabetes, or a family history of kidney disease, you're at risk for kidney failure? Please talk to your doctor and get screened. Develop a healthy relationship with your kidneys, and it'll benefit you for the rest of your life.
Just get to know me, that's all I'm saying.
A message from the National Kidney Foundation, who reminds you to love your kidneys. Visit kidney.org to learn lots more.
Good morning, world. This is Sublimity Cricket, a very special episode of Sublimity Cricket. My name's Kyle, joined on my right by Matt the Geeb Giebert.
That's right.
On my left by the man of many nicknames,
McClintock,
and Mr. Big Willie Style himself,
yo,
Will Smith.
Big Willie Style?
Hey, I mean, we didn't come up with it.
You're just going.
Just piggybacking. Piggybacking on the Fresh Prince. We've got a lot of things to get to today. Like I said, very special episode. We have the one, the only Dr. Shy. Well, I guess he's not the only Dr. Shy. His wife is also Dr. Shy.
He's the only president, Dr. Shy.
Only president, Dr. Shy. Will be joining us in 15 minutes, hopefully. Hopefully that all works out. We got a lot to get to until then. First things first, as was promised on our blog, sublimitycricket.wordpress.com, Will Smith will respond to DraftGate allegations. For those of you who weren't here or didn't listen 2 weeks ago.
Shame.
Yes, for shame once.
Shame.
Why not?
Second, Will Smith claimed to have gone to Animal Kingdom when he was 8 years old, even though Animal Kingdom opened a week after his 9th birthday. Allegations have been made. Will Smith, what is your response?
First off, I just wanted to apologize. I was high on my horse. Filled with pride, and I felt like I deserved the ability to lie to the radio viewing public. And I'm sorry. That's all you're getting out of me.
Is anything else in the police report?
No more questions.
Everything else is between you and Elon?
I already answered that question.
Now, are you going to use Buddhism to get back into the swing of things? Are you going to...
turn into the religion of my childhood.
But yeah, okay, so we've squashed that now. DraftGate is over, officially, I think. We can be done with that. Next piece of news. We forgot to mention Will Smith's Duke Blue Devils this past week. National champs, surviving a big scare from Butler, Brad Stevens and the Lost Boys.
Yeah, and the Lost Boys. I think they lost because it was past their bedtime.
It was a big game. Congratulations to Will Smith and his team. Fist pump. That doesn't really translate to radio there, bud.
We need a webcam.
We do need a webcam. More sports news. We'll get it out of the way so all of our Double X listeners can... we'll appreciate the rest of the show. Donovan McNabb, the quarterback of my team, the Philadelphia Eagles, was traded on Easter Sunday within the division to the Washington Redskins, which I was a little angry about at first. I'm not going to lie to you guys. Just that it was the Redskins. I resigned myself to the fact that he was going to be traded and just wanted the best deal for him. And the more I think about it, the more I think they got the best deal possible for Donovan McNabb. He's an older quarterback. To get one of the top picks in the second round and a third or fourth round pick next year, that's good with me. I can live with that. Especially in this draft, it's been said that it's one of the deepest
really
drafts
deep.
With a lot of people coming out because of the issues with the collective bargaining agreement. And I also heard a little conspiracy theory that the Eagles went and saw Sam Bradford's pro day. And they liked what they saw. They were afraid of what they saw. So they just dealt McNabb within the division to keep Sam Bradford out of the division. Which, I don't know any truth to that. But
I don't know if that's true. Because, I mean, quarterbacks, it's kind of, it can be hit or miss about how they develop. So you never know. But
that's very true. But I guess they're not afraid of Jimmy Clausen or Colt McCoy or whoever they're going to groom.
No.
Under McNabb.
Wouldn't say so.
But that's that. I'm okay with it, and I think Kevin Cobb will do a great job, hopefully. Yeah. He showed a lot in those two games he started earlier in the season when McNabb was inevitably hurt, as he always is.
Right.
And what's to say he's not going to be hurt next year for Washington like he has been the past 8 years for us. But that's it for sports. We got that under the rug.
We'll get that taken care of quickly so everyone else who isn't interested in sports can continue listening.
Actually, your Capitals, didn't they win the President's Trophy?
President's Trophy, best record, regular season record in the NHL. I'm awfully proud of that. I'm enjoying it, you know, rubbing it in the face of my roommates who cheer for other teams.
You'll have the Cubs to promptly put you back in your place.
Yeah,
very shortly.
They're already doing that. Don't worry.
Okay, that's the end of Balls Out, our short abbreviated sports segment for the day.
Yep.
News around campus, Friday night. Still Regal, still won. We're 2-0 in trivia competitions thus far. Furman has paid the four of us a total of $100 each, so
yep.
We're really excited about everything that's happened, and money's always good to have.
It's been a fantastic time so far. We've really enjoyed having a chance to do some trivia.
Well, our guest of honor has just arrived. We're going to go to a song real quick, and then we'll get everything set up. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, I heard that, man. How are y'all? How are you out there? Are you okay? You're not, you're staying stoned and you got enough water and you got a place to sleep and everything? What does that mean? Because we ought to, all of us, you know, I don't mean to be preachy, but we ought to remember, and that means promoters too, that music's for grooving, man, and music's not for putting yourself through bad changes. You know, I mean, you don't have to go take anybody's shit, man, just to like music. You know what I mean? You don't. So if you're getting more shit than you deserve, you know what to do about it, man. You know, it's just music. Music's supposed to be different than that.
Another little piece of a heart.
We're back on 95.9 WPLS.
This is Sublimity Cricket. We've got a very special guest today. Dr. Shai is in studio. We're honored to have him. He's very accomplished. I'm sure everyone knows he's the president of Furman, but he's published a number of books, a large number of articles. He's been helping out Furman for, let's see, it's 17 years?
16 years.
16 years as president. So.
Good morning, everyone. Delighted to be a part of this radio station. Very proud of it. Hope everyone is up and alert and moving around at this hour.
Dr. Shai, we have to tell you we were a little hesitant to invite you here. We know, and I'm sure you know from your personal experience, that when you invite presidents places, you can get yourself in trouble. We're kind of worried the professors might not be pleased.
Well, being my retirement year, you can get away with murder as far as I'm concerned.
Good to know. And this is a real retirement. You're not going to pull a Brett Favre on us and end up at Emory or Davidson or something?
You've got a lot of goodwill at this university right now, and I think if you show up at Davidson or something, you might burn up a lot of it here.
I'm definitely retiring from being a college president. I am eager to retrieve my weekends and nights. In fact, as I look ahead on my calendar for this month, April is almost a third over. I guess it is a third over, technically. And I have 17 events at night the rest of the month. So if you do the math, that's one or two free nights between now and May.
Wow.
That's pretty incredible.
That kind of leads into our first question, though, from Will Smith's mom. Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Where do I see myself in 5 years? Well, that's a very good question because it could I could be on a number of very different paths in 5 years. All I know for sure is that next year I'm going to take a year off. I'm focusing on two book projects, one that I've been working on for many years, an American history textbook called America, and every 3 years I produce a new edition. So I'll be working on the 9th edition. Wow. And then the other book is a book that I was planning to write when I was still a history professor at Davidson, but it's been dormant ever since I took the cold and dirty plunge into academic administration. And that's a book about loneliness in modern American culture. And so I'm going to reopen the boxes of research that I had squirreled away for that book and begin writing it.
Quick question about that one. Is that going to be a collaborative effort, or are you going to write that one by yourself?
It's going to be a very lonely process. In fact, it can be downright depressing. But it is true that if you look at most of the major forms of human expression, whether it be literature, art, theater, movies, poetry, even popular culture like the Peanuts cartoon series, alienation and loneliness are the prevailing themes of American culture since the end of World War II. And it's a fascinating question. That is, why would there develop an almost perennial epidemic or chronic epidemic of loneliness in American culture during this particular period? So as a historian, it's an intriguing question to wrestle with the fundamental structural and systemic changes in American society that might have triggered this growing sense of alienation. And of course, it's filled with ironies, fascinating ironies. You look at the evolution of the computer, the internet, all of the multimedia devices and equipment and social networking that goes on now, and yet surveys and data show that people are lonelier than ever despite their ability to connect electronically.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Just as a question about your tenure at Furman, what would you say you're proudest of, your proudest accomplishment here?
I think my proudest accomplishment is that I haven't gotten a DUI during my 16 years. I've been asked that question a lot this year, and it's very hard to choose because I've been fortunate to have been involved with a number of major changes. Most recently, the transformation of the Furman curriculum and the change in the academic calendar. And we're very excited about the early results of that, and we're going to continue to track very carefully the impact of the pedagogical changes. On the other hand, if I go back to the very front end of my presidency 16 years ago, the biggest surprise to me as an alumnus, having graduated in 1973 and then come back in 1993, the biggest change that I discovered was that Furman had lost its residential character. And what I mean by that is that when I started in 1969, there were 1,800 students enrolled at Furman, and virtually everyone lived on campus. The people who didn't live on campus were either married or they were commuters, that is, students who grew up in Greenville and commuted back and forth. When I came back in 1993, I discovered that Furman had the lowest residential rate of any of the top 30 liberal arts colleges in the nation. Barely 50% of our students lived on campus. And the reason for that is that enrollment had grown from 1973 to 1993 to 2,500. And even though that's still not a huge number, relatively speaking, it was almost a 50% increase in the size of the student body, and not a single bed had been added. So what had happened during the 1980s as that growth had occurred is that virtually all juniors and seniors lived off campus in public apartment complexes, and freshmen and sophomores lived on campus. So we had a split personality, and we had lost one of the animating premises of a residential liberal arts college, and that is that the students learn as much from interacting with one another 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, as they do from their classes and from their teachers. And one of the other statistical indicators of the negative effects of that was that when we looked at something like graduation rates or alumni giving, the lowest levels were among the classes of the 1980s, those that had lived off campus their junior and senior years. So all of that went into the decision we made, a rather bold decision, to build what has come to be called the North Village Apartment Complex, 11 buildings with about 1,100 beds. And so we went from being the lowest on-campus residential national liberal arts college to the highest within about a five-year period. We're now at about 96%. And now if you count the Vinings, which Furman technically owns, it would be closer to 100%.
Another thing along that line, you've built a lot of things around campus. You've played a role in renovating most of the academic buildings. If you could replace anyone's name with your own on any of the academic buildings or any building on campus, which one would it be?
Well, first, I don't think I would want to do that. And second, the Board of Trustees earlier this year actually named the Center for Sustainability in my honor, so I have something named for me, and I think one is plenty. So I think I'll diplomatically avoid that question and move on.
Fair enough. Well, we're going to take a break now. We'll have more with Dr. Shai after the song. Oh, after we get it queued up. Oops.
And some more music from my lifetime, correct?
That's correct. Our theme today is milestone years.
For Dr. Shai. So we've got, our first song was Janis Joplin.
I remember Janis well.
Another piece of my heart is 1969. And then this next one is from 1973. So those are the years that Dr. Shai was a student here at Furman. And then later on the show, we'll have music from 94 and 2010, so when he came as president and is retiring.
It's from classic album Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd, The Great Gig in the Sky.
I'm gonna go somewhere.
We're back, 95.9 WPLS. This is Sublimity Cricket.
Interviewing Dr. Shy.
And during the break, he was telling us a little bit about music when he was a student here in, from 69 to 73. And how about you tell us the public a little bit more about the big acts that came and the setting in which they come?
Well, it's hard to gauge, but intuitively, I sense that music for the generation of Furman students that I was a part of, that is in the late 60s, early 70s, was an even more important aspect of student life than it is today, in part because of just the social situation in the 1960s and 70s. Obviously, the Vietnam War was going on. The anti-war movement was pervasive, even on an ostensibly conservative campus like Furman. Certainly, we had a very different mix of students then than we have now. And likewise, the youth revolt, as some people termed it, all of that was very much wrapped around music, whether it was protest music about the war or about other social issues, or just the way in which music was a powerful outlet for so many people. I remember as a freshman, students on the hall gravitated to one or two rooms because those hallmates had the most sophisticated stereo equipment. They had the best sound, the biggest sound. Likewise, we had an opportunity in the late 60s and early 70s to bring some very prominent national bands to perform at Furman for relatively little expense. I'm not sure that's even possible these days just because of the way in which performance fees have skyrocketed over the years. But it was a much more common activity at Furman in those days to have major national performers every month at Furman rather than one or two a year. There would be major concerts in McAllister Auditorium at least monthly, and sometimes twice a month, and sometimes three times a weekend if it were a big event. That is, there would be big concerts consecutive nights, Friday, Saturday, Sunday night. So music was a very important aspect, not just of Furman culture, but of American culture then, perhaps even more so than now. And one of my roles as a student was being the manager of the student coffee house, which was on the lower level of the university center, and about 100 people could fit into the coffee house, and we had Furman student entertainers every Friday night. It was my job to schedule and book the acts. So every Friday night I was able to listen to a lot of great music and participate with a lot of friends with live music on campus, and I hope that's one of the things that will become even more prominent at Furman is Furman musicians performing regularly with a good crowd.
And you said you played some music back?
I did. I played guitar and focused on, I guess the most accurate moniker would be folk rock. I played with several other students, one of whom has spent his entire career as a professional musician ever since. So I take credit for his success as a performer. His name is Chris Richards, and he lives in Columbia and is a music teacher as well as a music performer. But we played a lot of Neil Young and Crosby, Stills and Nash and James Taylor and Cat Stevens music, and performed mostly at fraternities around the Southeast, but a little bit at the beach in the summers.
Very interesting. We actually have WPLS has put on a couple of events this school year where they had acoustic sessions live in the studio with Furman acts.
Great idea.
So they're getting back in there.
I think the more of that, the better.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Now, Dr. Shy's been kind enough to bring us a gift. He brought us some CDs from his son's band, if you'd like to tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, there's a lot of, ironic aspects to this story. Our son is now about 30 years old, and when we moved to Greenville in 1993, he was in junior high. And became very involved with music in high school here in Greenville at Travelers Rest High School, and spent many a night up in his room with his guitar practicing, but I never expected that he would become a professional musician. He went off to college at UNC and started a band while there, and that band has stayed together now for over 7 years, and they've become very successful. In fact, Susan and I just 3 weeks ago flew out to Austin, Texas to watch our son's band perform at South by Southwest, which was an incredible extravaganza for 8 days of 2,000 bands converging on Austin, Texas, and 250,000 people. But anyway, our son formed this band. They originally called themselves All Systems Go. They all live on the coast of North Carolina. They're all surfers and fishermen and snowboarders and skateboarders. And their music caters to those kids. But our son loves to tell the story that when he was growing up, we didn't let him watch MTV. And now much of his revenue comes from MTV. In fact, a couple of years ago, our son called us, and he was very excited. And he said, "Guess what I got in the mail today?" I said, "I have no idea." And he said, "I got a check for $46,000 from MTV for the rights to the music, to my music that they played last month." And I said, "Well, that's great," in part because I was worried if he would ever be able to make a living with his music. But now he's not only making a living, he's become quite an entrepreneur and owns properties in Wilmington, North Carolina. So he's been a very good investor. But it's been fun to watch them succeed. And unlike a lot of bands, they have stayed together the whole time. They haven't had any changes in personnel. They haven't had any squabbles. And he's really enjoyed it and found it very fulfilling.
It's more than a lot of bands can say these days.
Yeah.
As you know, there are thousands of bands, and some of the most talented ones just don't happen to get the coincidental breaks. Mm-hmm. So that's what's so poignant about the situation, is that sometimes it doesn't depend on your talent. It just depends on whether you get that opportunity at the right time.
All right, we're going to go to another song here, and we'll be back with more with Dr. Shy. This is Blue Mini Cricket.
My head.
stuff. That's
cool. We're back, 95.9 WPLS, and online, sublimitycricket.wordpress.com. We have more with Dr. Shy. We're going to talk a little bit about the transition of power, so to speak, to Dean Smola. If you have one piece of advice for Dean Smola, what would that be?
Well, he actually asked me that very question when we had a chance to meet soon after he was named president-elect. And I told him that there's a two-word phrase that's often attributed to Julius Caesar that I found very useful when I was a brand new president, and that is hasten slowly. And what's implied in that message is that any new organization, whether it be a university or a corporation or a government, expects their new leader to bring energy and vision and creativity. But at the same time, every organization also is proud of its tradition and proud of its way of doing things and has a deeply ingrained culture. So a new leader, especially someone who has had no prior involvement with the organization, and in this case, Dean Smola has a son who's a freshman here, but otherwise he did not attend Furman. He's going to, I think, understandably spend a lot of his first year listening and observing and absorbing, trying to better understand the distinctive texture and tone of Furman University before he begins launching any major new initiatives. And fortunately, in his case, as he would be the first to acknowledge, a number of the most important areas of Furman life have recently been addressed in a very strategic way, like the curriculum and like the physical plant. So there are no immediately urgent projects that he's going to have to inherit and immediately focus on. And that's good. It's good for him and it's good for the university that he'll be able to spend the first year organizing both his administrative team as well as developing a planning process that can generate those new ideas for the university in year two and three and so forth. So I hope that the Furman University extended family, not just the campus community, but also our alumni and friends all over the world, will be understandably patient with him as he gets his sea legs under him and begins to better understand what makes Furman tick before launching into a lot of new initiatives and projects.
Dr. Shaw, we're wondering, when Dean Smola first came to Furman, did he get the same tour of White Oaks that all the freshmen get with all the stories about Mary Poppins dancing on the roof and the president has to be his ashes put in an urn and over the mantelpiece?
Well, he and his wife, Michelle, did visit White Oaks when they were one of three finalists. We hosted all of the finalists at White Oaks, and Susan and I gave them a tour of the home, but not nearly as inventive a tour as the orientation staff provides the freshmen. We did, however, alert them to that tradition and use it as an illustration of the creativity of Furman students. They're very inventive, of course, and have very fertile imaginations, as demonstrated by all the things that those innocent, gullible freshmen have been told about White Oaks over the years. It's almost getting dangerous what's being told to them.
That's very true. Yeah. We have a friend who was very downtrodden when he learned that Ray Charles didn't play the piano at White Oaks.
Or that Mrs. Daniels' daughter didn't jump to her death from the third floor.
Yeah. Yeah, that's when we started to get skeptical on our tour, when there was the second set of tragic death with ghosts roaming the halls.
How could one house have had so many tragedies?
And Vice President Nixon burned the house down almost.
The fifth door.
Chain smoker.
Yeah.
Speaking about Furman legends, are you aware of your legendary ability to remember names and faces?
Well, to some extent, I'm aware of that legend. And like all legends, it's probably rooted in a germ of truth, but has been greatly embellished over time. And I suspect that it probably grows out of the fact that as a historian, I necessarily am someone who enjoys and has a knack for remembering dates and names and putting faces with names and people. So I think there is an element of truth to that, but certainly it's become embellished over the years, not unlike the stories about White Oaks. And I'm not nearly as perfect about remembering names years later than the myth might suggest.
Okay. Fair enough. I think that'll just about wrap up. Anybody else have any
questions? I have one question. Okay. Did you have any professors while you were here at Furman that you later went on to become their boss when you came back in the 90s?
Oh, yes. Yes, that was very awkward. including the more mundane aspect of just figuring out how to greet them. As a student, it was always Dr. So-and-so or Professor So-and-so. And now suddenly I was a peer of those same faculty members. In fact, Dr. Acey in the political science department, I think I had 3 or 4 courses with him as a student. And lo and behold, he's still here. Don Gordon in the political science department is another person who is seemingly ageless, like Don Acey. They both and others seem younger than I do, and even though they were my professors. So, yeah, that's been a very enjoyable aspect of my 16 years, is that I was able to come back and spend time with professors that I not only enjoyed in the classroom, but I very much respected as people.
Thank you so much for coming out, and it means a lot to us. I think I speak for the whole group when having somebody come in and legitimize our little fairy tale that we have going on inside of the WPLS studio.
Well, if there's one thing that I hope I accomplish by the time I retire on June 30th, it's legitimizing WPLS.
We'll hold you to that.
That's exactly right.
Thanks again, Dr. Shaw.
Thank you.
We're going to go to some music, come back after this.
Never mind what anybody else.
We're back on 95.9 WPLS and online at sublimitycricket.wordpress.com.
Streaming audio.
Streaming audio. And now on iTunes. I don't know if I said it on the air today.
Yeah.
But you can go to iTunes, and if you haven't subscribed to our podcast there, just do it, and the shows will be automatically uploaded into your iTunes account every time we upload one.
We know you want that.
Yes.
Just get on iTunes, do the little search box for Sublimity Cricket. We're the only podcast by that name.
Yeah, we should be the only thing by that name. I'm hoping.
If not, we will be contacting our lawyers.
But yeah, we're great. We love us. I'm subscribed to my podcast. I'm not ashamed.
Number one in Furman Morning Radio since 2009.
For 2 years now. But I'm subscribed to two podcasts, Ricky Gervais's and mine.
Ours is better. We're not narcissistic because last Sunday's afternoon consisted of listening to our podcast again. So
we're just a little high right now from, you know, the Dr. Shy interview going so
very
well,
cool
so.
Of him to come in.
Yeah.
And again, we think it went well.
Major props to him.
You can go to our website, sublimitycricket.wordpress.com. Let us know where we screwed up. We don't think we did, though. Like we said, we think we're awesome.
We hope this is first in a series of celebrity interviews that will continue.
I would say presidential interviews.
Presidential interviews. Yep. Yes, we can.
The Sublimity Cricket Presidential Interview Series.
And other important people. Very important.
That has to go in parentheses.
Okay, fair enough.
The Sublimity Cricket Presidential Interview Series, parentheses, and other important people.
Well, we have 10 minutes to kill. It's 11:50 right now.
You know what that means.
Weird news.
Oh, yes.
We need some sort of audio. Weird news.
We need some audio gimmick?
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
We'll figure that out.
I don't think that audio gimmick is very good.
I'm sorry.
We'll get back to you on that.
Weird news.
First article comes to us via Uniontown, PA. Police say a Pennsylvania father went to his son's elementary school to retrieve nearly four ounces of marijuana from the kindergartner's Elmo backpack. State police say Ronald Washington, 33, called Menallen Elementary School in Uniontown on Thursday morning to ask if his son had arrived at school. Police say Washington told school officials he needed to fetch something from the boy's backpack, prompting school officials to search it.
I'm hoping snack time immediately followed show and tell because those kids had the munchies.
School officials called to say they had found pot in the bag. Troopers were waiting to arrest Washington when he arrived shortly before 9 a.m.
If you look at the MSNBC website presenting this, it looks like the backpack's an Elmo bag.
Elmo not know how got there. Elmo was holding for friends.
But if you're gonna stash pot somewhere, why wouldn't it be?
Backpack?
No, I'm giving him some props. You would never think to look in a kindergartner's backpack for pot. Like, if you're trying to get it in somewhere, I don't think they're going to pat down your four-year-old.
Yeah, there's some reason to that. I'm thinking I would rather have a good parent than a smart drug stasher.
Tomato, tomato.
Fair enough.
Next one, kind of, probably a little bit related.
We're wondering if this guy is the dad from the previous story.
Headline reads, man with no cash eats burrito Funyuns at store. So a guy walked into a convenience store, a gas station, convenience store in Michigan, and helped himself to a burrito and bag of Funyuns, and then told the clerk to call the police because he couldn't pay for it.
I like that. At least you're being honest.
He's being charged with retail fraud, and he's homeless.
Retail fraud?
And he's being held for $2,000 bail. So that is a $2,000 burrito and bag of Funyuns.
They must have made those Funyuns out of gold.
Good. Taco Bell, get the same thing for 99 cents. Burrito fraud.
But by same thing, do you mean diarrhea or?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sublimity Cricket, no longer having to class it up.
Immediately, back in the gutter.
All right, that's the end of that article. I'm done with that one.
Yeah, I'm tired of it.
Next one comes from across the pond.
We're going to Copenhagen.
And across Europe a little bit.
Across another pond.
A smaller pond.
Brewer Carlsberg, which is a big deal in Europe.
Yep. Right? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Removed coolers from the workplace and reinstated a rule where you could only drink beer at lunch.
This is extremely...
Scores of Carlsberg workers walked off their jobs in protest Thursday after the Danish brewer tightened laid-back rules on workplace drinking and removed beer coolers from work sites. The warehouse and production workers in Denmark are rebelling against the company's new alcohol policy, which allows them to drink beer only during lunch hours in the canteen. Previously, they could help themselves to beer throughout the day from coolers placed around the work site. The only restriction was that you, quote, could not be drunk at work. It was up to each and everyone to be responsible, company spokesman Jens Bick said.
See, now there's the difference between Europe and America. You institute a lunch-only beer rule in Europe, they strike. You institute a lunch-only beer rule in America, they work for free.
About 800 workers went on strike, and about 250 simply walked off their jobs, resulting in interruptions to beer transports in and around Copenhagen.
Which means no one else got beer at lunch.
That's just being inconsiderate right there. Not only did they screw themselves out of beer, they screwed the whole country out of beer for a while.
Carlsberg's truck drivers joined the strike in sympathy, even though they're exempt from the new rules. The truck drivers are permitted to bring 3 beers from the canteen because they often don't have time to have lunch there. The trucks have alcohol ignition locks, preventing the drivers from driving drunk.
What a different world. They would burn Furman's campus down if they saw the policy we have here.
I think we should...
If we had a policy like that that got restricted, you know, you'd have the DH workers walking off the job.
That's incredible.
We should cite this as precedent.
Yeah. In Carlsberg workers v. Carlsberg. That's... So the drivers are allowed to have beers,
I can believe it. Their culture is much looser. I remember we were eating dinner in Europe, and someone had knocked back 4 beers and said, anybody want to ride home? And it was like, no, thank you.
That is crazy.
I just love that the truck drivers are exempt from the rule barring you from drinking except only at lunch, because they don't have time to eat lunch. You can still drink.
But you can't soak anything up. No starches.
Wow.
Alright, we're going to end this show as I would any good show, with a little bit of Pearl Jam.
You would end anything with a little bit of Pearl Jam.
Yeah, so...
End your point.
This is Just Breathe.
Yeah.
Reporting live from the White House, this is Subliminy Cricket.
This is us signing off. Have a good week, y'all.
Take care of each other.